It's about 15 seconds after the hour. Today is Tuesday, the 30th of August. I'm Ben Brown. This is a Juneau Afternoon. Our guests today include a representative of the Alaska Department of Homeland Security and Emergency Management about the earthquake simulator's visit to Juneau starting tomorrow. We'll also learn a little bit more about Donna Cotati's show, Keeping the Tradition, opening at the Jack on the 2nd of September. An update on some UAS classes being offered, and the principal of Zantikihini Middle School will be here to talk about a middle school open house. All that with the customary items such as Bird Note and Garrison Keillor's Writer's Almanac here on a Juneau Afternoon. Stay tuned after National Native News and listen.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Fire officials say they're starting to send some crew members to other fires from the one burning on the Spokane Reservation. Steve Jackson has more.
Fire officials Monday said they were making good progress on that fire, despite weekend winds of up to 35 miles an hour. That prompted crews to put in a backup containment line. Fire Information Officer Linda Parker says things are starting to get back to normal for area residents.
And other good news for some, that schools opened in the Wellpinit area today after having been delayed for a week. And the powwow scheduled for Labor Day weekend is on as planned. No changes there at all.
Official containment of the blaze is now at 75%. Parker says while there's no projected time frame for full containment, they feel confident that things are progressing well enough to release some firefighters from the blaze to take on other fires in the region. For National Native News, I'm Steve Jackson reporting from Spokane.
Leaders from 8 Washington tribes will stand with leaders of the Standing Rock Sioux tribe tonight to show their support of Standing Rock's opposition of the Dakota Access Pipeline. The tribes are seeking protection of sacred places and treaty rights. The leaders will gather tonight near Cannonball, North Dakota. Washington tribal leaders say they relate to Standing Rock's fight. They face similar challenges to their lands and ways of life in the Northwest. Leaders say they've successfully fought proposed transportation of coal, which they say would violate treaty rights, endangered fish and wildlife, and the environment. The Washington tribes are joining other tribal leaders who've publicly voiced support for Standing Rock. The Decolonizing Alaska Art Exhibit, currently on display in Homer, Alaska, challenges outdated views of what Native art should be according to creators. KBBI reporter Shayla Farzon has the story.
An innovative new exhibit at Bunnell Street Art Center has turned a spotlight on Alaska's long history of colonization. Asia Freeman, the curator of Decolonizing Alaska, says colonization has had a powerful influence on the state.
Alaska has been colonized by forces for centuries now that have defined and shaped our identity as a state.
The exhibition tells a multitude of stories from many perspectives. Rebecca Lyon's mixed media piece, Counting on Liberty, represents the long struggle for women's rights.
It's a piece of artwork that I silkscreened, an image of my great-grandmother, Anastasia Nanaltna.
Lyon's great-grandmother was sold into slavery as a young girl.
She had a very difficult life, but if you look at the photograph, you can see such pride, strength.
Along the edge, Lyon has positioned an Athabascan counting cord. It's covered with memorabilia documenting the history of the women's rights movement. Artist Mike Conti stands beside his black and white photograph of a young Yupik woman named Jackie.
I call it Yupik Ina, which means Yupik house, and then in quotes, white gaze.
The photograph shows the woman wearing jeans and a kusbuk. She's standing inside of an Alaska Native diorama full of stiffly posed mannequins in traditional dress.
You're looking through glass, and then in the glass you can see a reflection of me, the photographer.
As a self-described white guy, Conti is acutely aware of how often the Alaska Native narrative has been in the hands of outsiders.
The control of the perception is in the viewer, in this case, the white photographer.
For curator Asia Freeman, this collaboration of Native and non-Native artists is part of what makes the show so groundbreaking.
I think the thing that is most exciting is to actually say out loud that this type of show hasn't happened before.
Over the next year, the Decolonizing Alaska exhibit will travel to Valdez, Washington, D.C., Juneau, and Anchorage. In Homer, I'm Shayla Farzon.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. And by the law firm of Sanosky, Chambers, Saxe, Miller & Munson, advocating Native American interests throughout the United States, with offices in New Mexico, California, Alaska, and Washington, D.C.
Support by the Albuquerque Hispano Chamber of Commerce's Convention and Tourism Department, providing complete convention and visitor planning services to Native American conventions in Albuquerque. Information on convention and tourism services at siabq.org.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
It is 6 minutes after the hour. Today is Tuesday, the 30th of August, the last Tuesday of August. I'm Ben Brown, and this is a Juneau Afternoon. And our first guest today is Michelle Brown, and she is here to talk about a very shakingly exciting event that's about to visit us here in the capital city. So welcome to a Juneau Afternoon, Michelle.
Thank you, Ben. Glad to be here.
And you are with the City and Borough of Juneau's Local Emergency Planning Committee.
That's correct.
And CBJ's Emergency Planning Committee has been partnering with the state's Division of Homeland Security and Emergency Management to make this happen. Isn't that right?
That is right.
So tell us a little more about the Quake House.
Well, it's been a long time in coming. It's one of very few Quake Houses in the whole world, and the state of Alaska is lucky to own one. It's a fairly intensive and expensive endeavor to get it to Southeast, and so it's touring all the communities in many of the communities in Southeast Alaska right now, and we're very lucky to have it here in Juneau for 2 days.
Absolutely. And so how long has the state of Alaska had this incredible piece of equipment?
You know, I don't know the answer to that.
But, I mean, it's not a recent acquisition.
No, they've been taking it around on the interior and training and showing people for quite some time now.
Well, obviously, earthquakes are very timely after the tragedy in Amatrice in central Italy to the east of Rome. 270 people lost their lives there.
Yeah.
And that was only a 6.1, but it was only about 6 miles under the ground.
Right.
So in addition to the actual physical experience of feeling a 7.1 earthquake, I imagine there's a lot of education involved in this earthquake simulation tour.
There is. And what we've decided is education. There's a lot of people who have been to a lot of different events, and they've learned a lot of things. And if you ask a room full of people how many are actually prepared, all the hands go down. And so what we're trying to do is get people thinking about motivation in a motivation way rather than. So this is a hands-on, fun experience that you can actually get a feel for what an earthquake, and they can go up to 8.5, but they're aiming at a 7.1 for this event. And so that is a hard earthquake. So you will get the feel for an earthquake when you sit down in the simulator and they turn on the big screen and then they start shaking the building, and you'll have a new perspective. You won't be able to just run outside to save yourself. You will need to stop and drop and get yourself undercover.
And so there's some other elements to this isn't just the simulator. There's a fire training house and some other components that people are going to be able to enjoy if they're able to come tomorrow or on Thursday.
Yes, CCFR is bringing their fire training house so that they can teach people when it's appropriate to stop, drop, and roll, and when it's appropriate to run out. And so that is another real good training tool that lives here in Juneau and belongs to CCFR. And then we also have the Salvation Army. For the first time ever, Juneau now has what they call a canteening trailer. It's a mobile kitchen, commercial mobile kitchen. So if there were a real disaster and we had people separated, it could go to individual parts of the community and serve hot food. It could also go to a shelter and serve hot food. What they're going to do for us is they're going to, for the first time, use their kitchen to serve hot dogs and drinks to survivors of our earthquake simulator.
And so this is a free event.
It is.
And the one thing I know as a DJ here at KTOO, we've been warned, luckily my show's today and not tomorrow or Thursday, there's going to be a bit of a parking impact. And so if you want to come, you need to account for the fact you're not just going to pull into the KTOO parking lot, because that's where the simulator is going to be.
Right. The museum has kindly offered us several things. First of all, parking. And so the parking at the museum is available for the whole day until 4:30. And then you need to be able to move your car before 4:30 because it's a secure parking area under their building, under the new Alaska State Museum. And it will, the garage doors close at 4:30. So if you don't have your car out, you can't pick it up until the next day. So that would be no fun. And then the other thing that they're doing is they're allowing us to park the simulator outside next to the sculpture at the front side of their building next to K2. So they're going to be hosting the area for that as well. And one more thing. Mm-hmm. And they are also going to give at 4 o'clock, they're going to be doing in their sphere room a very good presentation on earthquakes locally and in the state and in the nation. So.
And having visited the Andrew Kesheveroff building, the new State Museum, a couple of times, I can say the parking lot downstairs is beautiful. It's spotless and clean, and boy, you could never park your car anywhere nicer. So if you have a leaking oil or something, you don't want to park it down there because it's too clean for that. And then the Sphere Room, I've been to a brief presentation in, and that's going to be where this presentation on science of earthquakes is going to take place.
That's correct.
Now, will that be both days at 4 p.m.?
It will.
Okay.
And the entrance to that presentation is going to be absolutely free. And the museum is also offering, if you bring a child to the event, then they will allow one adult admission free to go into the museum for the whole museum. So, fun thing for you to do while you're here.
And again, if listeners have not been to the new museum facility, the only area where admission is charged is the museum side. The library part, the archives part, are open to the public whenever you'd like to go in. And it's just a beautiful building. So this is just a great opportunity to come learn about earthquakes, how to be prepared for them, how we respond as a community, and also experience this wonderful state-of-the-art new treasure we have here in the capital city.
Right.
And so obviously, one of the things about preparedness. Oh, and I'm sorry. Go ahead. You want to talk a little bit about the presentation?
I do, because KTOO has been frantically scrambling for us and very, very kind to give us the use of their building rooms, their conference room, the at 360 KTOO room downstairs, and also the conference room. So the whole day we're going to have info booths set up with one-on-one people to talk to you about different things and some handouts. And then we're also going to have some presentations rolling the whole day in the conference room, so that interesting things about all kinds of disasters that have happened around the state and the world will be talked about, and you'll have a better idea of how to plan and react if it happens to you.
And that's actually what I was going to say right before I almost cut you off from talking about the presentation. Preparedness actually does involve having a plan in the event of a natural disaster that makes you unable to be at your house. And, of course, that presupposes if you have a bag at the house that you can get it from the house before you go wherever you're going to go. But, basic medications, maybe having a water supply or emergency food supply stashed somewhere, certainly some clothes, medications, pets. People don't think about what they're going to do with their pets in the event of an emergency. Mm-hmm. And I imagine there'll be some literature that kind of helps people think about that difficult but important topic.
Yes. And it's what we found, as I said, education is not enough. We know, a lot of us know what to do. We haven't been doing it. And so what we're asking people to do is think about who depends on you. And who depends on you could be your pets, your grandchildren, your children, your wife, whoever it is that needs you to survive the best if a disaster were to hit. And if you'll think about that and then ask yourself the question, are you prepared? You'll know why you need to be prepared.
Mm-hmm. One thing that occurred to me is when you're preparing that bag of extra clothes, maybe you have some you don't wear that often. That's a good way to get rid of them without getting rid of them.
Right. And most of us work 8 hours a day at our job, and so maybe we're not home right there. So it's good to have a go bag in your office.
Well, these are all, again, not easy to talk about things, but this whole program for the next 2 days sounds like it's not going to make it just a little more exciting and fun, but more approachable, and probably in a way literally will jolt some people into thinking about it in the manner they haven't before.
I like that.
Okay, so this is the What's Shaken Juneau, Alaska's Earthquake Simulator event, and it's tomorrow and Thursday.
Correct.
What time does it start each day?
It starts at 11 a.m. and it goes until 7 p.m.
Okay, so there's a nice after work window of time there.
Yes, there is. We did that on purpose so that people in school and work could still fit.
And if people want to learn more about this specific two-day event or generally about what CBJ has to offer in the way of emergency planning, is there a place on the city website they can go?
There is, and it is at the city website, cbj.org. And so you can go there to look it up. But you can also call me personally, and my name is Michelle Brown, and I'm at the City Borough of Juneau Emergency Programs. My phone number is 586-0371, and my email is michelle.brown@juneau.org, and Michelle has the two L's.
Excellent. Well, Michelle, any other final words you'd like to share with our listeners this afternoon?
Come and have fun and learn. Get a free hot dog from the Salvation Army trailer and tell your friends to come and learn and have fun with us too.
All right. Thank you so much, Michelle Brown. I hope you have a wonderfully successful event over the next 2 days.
Thank you for having me.
Indeed.
Day after day, more people come to L.A. Shh, don't you tell anybody, the whole place slipping away. Where can we go when there's no San Francisco? Tie up the boat in Idaho. Do you know the swim? You better learn quick, Jim. Those who don't know the swim better sing the hymn. Tuna at the bowl, fine fillet of mutton. Ooh, what can you do with a bushel of wet gold?
It's about 18 minutes after the hour. Today is Tuesday, the 30th of August. I'm Ben Brown. This is a Juneau Afternoon. And our next guest is Donna Cattotti, who has a show at the Juneau Arts and Culture Center, the JAC, entitled Keeping the Tradition. And it opens this Friday, first Friday. So welcome to a Juneau Afternoon, Donna.
Thank you.
And so Keeping the Tradition is the title of the show. And why don't you go ahead and tell us how you chose that title and how it reflects your work?
Well, I chose that title, first of all, because a painting that I did just recently, although I was working on it for several years, is of a Filipino woman that lived in Haines. She's absolutely gorgeous. And when I asked her to model for me, she said, can I wear my traditional costume? And I said, of course. And it's this beautiful blue, bright blue, silky thing with embroidery that she had made. Anyway, I painted her in this dress. And it just happened that she wanted everything according to the Philippine tradition, which was that her hair had to be up and she had to have her pearls on and she had on this amazing dress. And she said that even having a portrait made was a Philippine tradition. So that got the title of the painting, which is Keeping the Tradition from Afar. You might have seen it on a poster around town.
Mm-hmm.
So then when I'm trying to come up with a title for the show, one of the things that's happening in the art world these days is people are coming back to the traditional skills that were almost lost. You know, late 1800s in France was the height of traditional classical skills, in my opinion, some of the artists of that era. And, you know, Impressionism came in, and I love Impressionism, don't get me wrong, But somewhere along the way, the modern art came in, and if that's what you love, great, go for it. But but what we did as a artistic society is we kind of threw away those traditional skills. And one of the most famous, very successful in his lifetime men who painted 800 and something gorgeous big paintings, people forgot who he was within a matter of 100 years. Who was that guy, right? So his name is coming back. The skills are coming back. Schools, when I was in college, I'm 66 now, right? when I was going to college, I thought about art, but I thought you were either born with it or not born with it. I didn't realize that you could learn, that you could acquire the skills necessary. And pretty much most of the universities at that time, everything was avant-garde, and from there it's even gone to now it's conceptual. You're not even, the art world has become something other than what it used to be. And that's all fine. There's room for everybody and every style and everything. But let's not throw away the classical skills. Picasso learned classical skills before he went on to do what he's more famous for. So anyway, the traditional skills are coming back. There's a lot of atelier schools around the country now and around the world, for that matter, where you can study and take a four-year program of learning the skills the same way they did hundreds of years ago.
And so how many pieces are in this show that you'll have opening on Friday?
I believe there's 32 or 34, something like that.
So that probably fills the Jack Gallery pretty nicely.
It's kind of crowded.
Well, that's all right. It's a lovely room when it's full of beautiful art. And how long have you been working on this 32-piece collection? When did you start the earliest start date of any of the pieces?
Oh, well, I guess I'll start from the present, okay? Yesterday I got on the ferry from Haines, which is where I'm from, and I was putting one piece in the frame at 4:45 for the 8 p.m. ferry. So I'm kind of down to the wire, and I sort of had the edge. Well, if it's done, it's done, and I'll put it in the frame, and if it's not done, oh, well, you know? So, and my life is very busy with any number of things, not the least of which is, making paintings. So, a lot of them are from 2016. There's a batch from 2015. And I brought what I thought was more than I could possibly put in the space. And a lot of the portraits go back to 2013. I didn't feel too bad about bringing the older pieces because Juno has not seen them. Haynes has seen them, but Juno has not seen them. A few of them have been in national competitions. A couple of them have been in the National Arts Club in Manhattan. So the paintings themselves have kind of been seen here and there, but not in Juno. And then when it came down to the wire, I said to myself, boy, I got this nice little Alaskan landscape. It's been kicking around here for 10 years. So I'm going to bring it just for the heck of it, and if it fits, I'm going to put it in there.
Are the pieces dated? So blah,
blah, oh, yes. Yeah, they're all dated.
Exciting. Wonderful. The National Arts Club, that's that little place off of Gramercy Square, isn't
yes,
it?
Yes, actually, yeah.
I lived in Manhattan the last 3 months of law school, so I went to a couple of fun luncheons there.
Uh-huh.
I have speakers there and things all the time. So
yeah, they have regular shows by different organizations, and I've been in three times in the last year. I've had three different shows that I got a piece in there.
Well, so congratulations. How long have you lived up in Haines?
I have lived in Haines since 1987.
All right, so a good long while.
Good long while.
And is there a very large community of visual artists in Haines?
Well, when I moved there, I was told that Haines had the largest per capita number of artists of anywhere in the U.S. Well, now, is that true or is that not true? I don't know. But in the old days, we used to sit around a bunch of us artists that lived out in Mud Bay, and we'd say, oh, we should all do a show together. Just recently, I did guest curate a show at the museum with 17 Mud Bay artists. And there are a lot of artists there, and they're not all painters and representational that way, but, there's writers, there's musicians, there's carvers. The native arts are very, very strong. And there's a lot going on in the arts in Haines. We now have the Arts Confluence putting on things, and mm-hmm. I have personally started to bring in Studio Incommodati from Philadelphia, and our third portrait workshop is coming up next summer. We've had two very successful ones. So that's one of those four-year atelier schools that's sending someone all the way to Alaska to help teach the community. And so we're always working on trying to get more arts things going, but yeah.
That's a good answer. I do not spend as much time up in Haines as I probably should. It's a wonderful place, and I know that people who live there, it's very special. Then that's where our executive director from our Arts Council is from, of course. Nancy DeCherney is a
right.
Haines girl
uh-huh.
from back in the day.
And so is Megan that works down at the Jack Gallery. She's grew up there.
Indeed. Mm-hmm. So the show on Friday is part of the monthly First Friday festivities.
Correct.
And so what time will the show open?
The reception starts at 4:30 to 7, and then the show itself will remain in place till September through September 30th.
Excellent. And pieces are for sale.
Most of them. Yeah, okay. A couple of them are not, but most of them are.
Very good. And do you have a website if listeners wanted to learn more about you and your art?
I do. DonnaCatotti.com, and the Catotti part is spelled C-A-T-O-T-T-I. And I just want to mention, too, I'm hoping that this show, there's a lot of portraits and there's landscapes, but I'm hoping to find a few portrait commissions. So if anybody's interested in that, they could get hold of me.
I see. So if they see a portrait of someone else and they like that style, they could contact you and say, would you do a portrait of me or my
exactly.
loved one?
Exactly. Okay. I mean, my figurative work, the portraits that are there, all of them but one are for sale. But if you want a portrait done of yourself, that is something that I'm looking to do.
Excellent. Well, let me ask you this. Do you have any other... I mean, it sounds like you are able to travel a fair amount in conjunction with your artistic work. Do you have any exciting painting-related trips coming up?
Always.
Where are you going to be going?
Well, I have become involved with the Portrait Society of America, and I am the Alaskan ambassador for that group. And so we don't have too many members in Alaska. I think there's about 10 of us. But I get out word to them. I'm trying to curate a show for all the Alaskan members at the Sheldon Museum in Haines next summer. But they have a conference every year that is an amazing event with 800 artists, and the best of the best, these 80-something-year-old people demonstrate, well, young people too, but demonstrating on the big stage, and everybody's donating their time and paying their own expenses, so it's very congenial. There's nobody trying to hide their secrets, let's put it that way. So I do that every April now, and in conjunction to that, I'm hoping to take... a class in Utah, a plein air painting class on my way back east. And then there's a gal I've been wanting to study with for 20 years that's doing a color of light pastel class in Atlanta, which is where the conference is being held this year. And that's in April.
Well, that's a good time to go to Atlanta.
And I might go to if I'm in the same show in the National Arts Club in December, I might go back to Manhattan again in December. And then next summer, like I said, we have Studio Incommonati coming to Haines again for a portrait workshop. And I will be going back there for a few more advanced portrait figure classes in August, because you can never... Art is the kind of thing you've never done learning. Mm-hmm. And it's very encouraging to me when I see the people that are painting the popes and the presidents up on that stage at the portrait conference, and those guys are saying, I hope I can do better tomorrow. So there's always room to learn more. We're never done.
And that probably is true for everything about human experience, but we know it's true about art.
Absolutely.
Oh, excellent, Donna. Well, it sounds like you are going to have a busy fall and winter, but you're kicking it off this Friday, the 2nd of September, with your show, Keeping the Tradition, opening at the Jack. The reception's going to be at 4:30, and the gallery will be open until 7 that night, but the show will be open the entire month of September.
That's correct.
So any other words you'd like to share with our listeners this afternoon?
Well, I'm just very excited to have this opportunity to show it in Juneau. You know, I've been involved with a few galleries in town, but it's always been mostly my serigraph silkscreen prints. So this is pastels and oils. There's not a single serigraph in the show, although the lobby shop does have a few of those. But, and that's another whole realm of artistic endeavor. And I hope that everybody can find the time to come down and enjoy the opportunity.
It's a perfect way to start the Labor Day weekend, I'm quite sure.
Great.
Thank you so much, Donna Catani, and I hope you have a very successful show this Friday at the Jack.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday, the 30th of August, 2016. It's the birthday of the physicist Ernest Rutherford, born in Brightwater, New Zealand, 1871, who discovered the concept of radioactive half-life and that atoms of one radioactive element could spontaneously turn into another, and who developed a model of the atom after discovering that most of the mass of an atom is concentrated in its nucleus. It was Ernest Rutherford who said all science is either physics or stamp collecting. It was on this day in 30 BC that Queen Cleopatra of Egypt killed herself with a snake. It was not an asp. It's thought that it was an Egyptian cobra. She'd been held captive by Octavian, who had defeated her and Mark Antony at the Battle of Actium, and he took Cleopatra prisoner. And when she heard that he was planning to parade her in a triumphal return to Rome, she took the snake and killed herself. It's the birthday of the cartoonist R. Crumb, born Robert Dennis Crumb in Philadelphia, 1943. He was dyslexic. He had a hard time learning to read. He preferred television and comic books, especially Little Lulu, Donald Duck, and Peanuts. Crumb said, "There were no books in our house. There were trashy magazines. My mother read movie and detective magazines. My father read the paper, and that was it. His older brother, Charles, taught him to draw. They spent hours drawing their own comic. He never went to college, never went to art school. He went to Cleveland and became an artist at the American Greeting Card Company. R. Crumb said, "I was a teenage social outcast. At the time, it made me feel very depressed. Later, I realized I was actually quite lucky because it freed me. I was free to develop and explore on my own all these byways of the culture that if you're accepted, you just don't do." He then went off to San Francisco, became famous as a hippie cartoonist, drawing Fritz the Cat and Mr. Natural and Keep on Truckin'. R. Crumb, who has lived in the south of France for the past 25 years, still using Strathmore vellum surface paper and Pelican black drawing ink. Here's a poem for today by Ron Kirchhey, "Losing My Religion." At the Illinois State Fair, I was given $5 and allowed to roam the midway. I didn't want cotton candy or a corn dog. I wasn't old enough for French follies. Then I saw a kid carrying a giant panda that looked like a god other prizes might pray to. Of course, I lost all my money and didn't win a thing. Moping around, though, I saw the same kid slip between tents, return the panda to a grizzled carny, and get paid. I was a sensitive child, the sort of little Patty Waste who might grow up to be a poet, so I burst into tears. A policeman led me to the pavilion of lost children. I cried loudest of all and refused the awful cookie. By the time my parents found me, I was running a fever, and my father drove home disgusted, getting a speeding ticket, which he blames me for to this very day. A poem by Ron Kirchhey, "Losing My Religion from Fever," published by Red Hen Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by Lumosity, with a 10-minute fit test to calculate baseline scores and training programs with 50 challenging brain games. Learn more at lumosity.com. And by the Poetry Foundation, you can subscribe to the Poetry Magazine podcast and the Poetry Off the Shelf podcast in the iTunes store or listen at poetryfoundation.org. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch. Thank you.
And that was Hot Tuna, Keep Truckin', here on a Juneau afternoon. It's about 37 minutes after the hour. The forecast from our friends at the National Weather Service is for mostly cloudy conditions tonight, sprinkles, a low around 50 degrees, and east winds to 20 miles per hour. However, it's actually partly sunny out right now. Tomorrow, Wednesday, scattered rain showers, a high in the mid-60s, and northeast winds to 15 miles per hour. A little windier downtown, and a little warmer out in the valley. Tomorrow night, cloudy with a low around 50 degrees, west winds to 15 miles per hour. Moving into Thursday, we're looking at partly sunny conditions, a high in the mid-60s, and then cloudy Thursday night, and then some more sun this weekend for Labor Day weekend. So certainly something to be pleased about there.
How people describe Donald Trump.
Race baiting.
Charismatic.
Pathological liar.
Larger than life.
And Hillary Clinton.
Policy wonk.
Scorned, strong female.
Very private person.
Seems like a terrible human.
I'm Rachel Martin. Join me for a special broadcast, The Making of Clinton and Trump. Character in the 2016 election from NPR News.
Thursday at 7 on KTOO News, Juneau.
A few announcements this afternoon. Tomorrow, Wednesday, the 31st of August, the Juneau Parks and Recreation Community Hike will be the Auk New Trail to John Muir Cabin. It's a moderate hike, approximately 6.5 miles round trip with an elevation gain of 1,600 feet. Waterproof and warm clothing and stable shoes or footwear are highly encouraged for the slippery boardwalk, as is bringing food and water. The group will rendezvous at 9:30 a.m. at the Auk New Trailhead parking lot at 12.6 mile Glacier Highway. And there will be a berry picking going on near the cabin. So bring a bucket and no dogs or firearms as always. Carpooling is encouraged. Have a great hike if you join the Juneau Parks and Recreation Hike tomorrow, the last day of August. A public service announcement from the National Oceanographic and Atmospheric Administration, NOAA Fisheries, regarding sea lions. Apparently people have been feeding sea lions and other marine mammals, which is illegal and often results in nuisance at a minimum and can be very dangerous if the animals become riled up. So if you are fishing and cleaning your fish and discarding fish waste, you want to do it away from stellar sea lions or any other marine mammals, and just stay 100 yards away from the animals because they are protected under the Marine Mammal Protection Act, which actually provides for some pretty stiff penalties for violation. And the Juneau Family Health and Birth Center is having a fun run this weekend, Labor Day, on Saturday the 3rd at 9 a.m. It will start at the Juneau Family Health and Birth Center at 1601 Salmon Creek Lane, a one-mile walk and or run to the base of Salmon Creek Hill, and a five-mile run to the powerhouse, and it will end again at the birth center. It's sponsored by the Juneau Family Health and Birth Center. There is a $20 registration fee for adults, a mere dollar for kids. It begins at 8 a.m. For more information, you can go to info@junobirthcenter.org or call the Juneau Family Health and Birth Center at 586-1203.
Walk the tightrope for goodness and hold on.
The Juneau Arts and Humanities Council, in partnership with KTOO, is thrilled to bring Grammy-nominated musician Modest Yahoo to Juneau on September 23rd.
One day.
Expect an intimate, supercharged performance that blends reggae, beatboxing, hip-hop, singer-songwriting, and a whole lot of soul. Tickets at the Jack and Hearthside Books. Modest Yahoo in Juneau, September 23rd.
Thank you.
It's 44 minutes after the hour this Tuesday, the 30th of August. That was Towers and Kivas, a piece from Jill Haley's National Park Soundscapes. It's a series of pieces that she's written and performed with David, Dana, and Graham Cullen and Tony DeAngelis, celebrating America's national parks. And so that was Towers and Kivas. So next on a Juno afternoon, with a quarter hour to go, we are going to be talking to Molly Yerkes, the principal from Zantikihini Middle School, about an open house taking place at Zantikihini tomorrow.
Yes, we have open house from 5 to 6 o'clock, so we just wanted to remind parents, if they have students at Zantikihini, to please come join us. It's a great opportunity to meet teachers, find out a little bit about the curriculum and the activities that are going to be going on at the school this year. And also, Floyd Dryden is having their open house at the same time as well, so if you have a student at Floyd Dryden, then head that direction.
Or if you were crazy, you could come to yours if you had a Floyd Dryden student. No, that wouldn't make any sense. So school's been going on for about a week.
Yep.
And how's it going?
You know, it just seems like we have a fabulous group of kids this year, really nice kids.
And I think I saw something in the Empire that enrollments were a little bit surprisingly up across the district. How are they at your school?
So we have about 36 students over projection at our school, which is wonderful. So we're a little bit busting at the seams, but all of our classes are full, so we're happy.
Excellent. And what is the overall student population at Zantikihini?
So we have just under 500 students at our school.
And that's three grades?
Three grades, sixth, seventh, and eighth grade, yes.
All right. Yeah, I'm from the older generation. When I went to junior high school, it was just seventh and eighth grades. And look how I turned out. You can see why they changed it. So what activities will be on offer for students and their parents and families if they want to come to the open house tomorrow afternoon?
So typically, our open house is about an hour, and we try to budget some time for parents to really just go around and meet the students. Content area teachers, so they're math, language arts, social studies, and science teachers. So we set aside about 20 minutes for that. And then typically our school is broken up into smaller learning communities or houses.
Mm-hmm.
And those houses will do a presentation that's about 15, 20 minutes. And then parents have the opportunity to go visit the exploratory classes and programs, so art and music and PE and technology and all of those classes.
So it sounds like it's a good opportunity, and it's not right after school began. I mean, the students have settled into place a little bit, hopefully, and so this is a real good opportunity. Now, if there's no pre-registration necessary, but parents can just show up at the beginning time.
Right. It's not a parent-teacher conference, so it's not a one-on-one conversation with a teacher, but it's just a nice opportunity to learn a little bit more about the school and the programs that we offer.
Very good. And so this is, again, the time tomorrow?
From 5 to 6 o'clock.
Okay, 5 to 6 o'clock at Zantikihini.
Mm-hmm.
And if parents did have some questions they wanted to ask in advance, mm-hmm. how would they go about contacting you or the appropriate staff person there at the school?
So if you go on to the Zantikihini website, it has all of our staff members and their contact information. Or you can just call the school number, which is 463-1899, and we can connect with you whatever person you're trying to reach or whatever program. One other thing that I did want to mention is we do also have a very rich after-school program. The school offers a variety of activities, and then also the BAM program offers a whole slew of activities, so it's a nice opportunity to find out a little bit about what your student can be doing after school that they might be excited about. And along that note, we're always looking for volunteers to come in and offer different activities. If you're interested in, really anything, fly tying or ceramics or cooking, or are interested in offering an after-school activity, then we would love to share that opportunity with our students.
And there probably is some process. The parents have to kind of let you know what they'd want to do.
Exactly.
Give some information on themselves.
Background check process. So, yeah.
Now, of course, at the junior high level, we don't have the level of athletic opportunities that we maybe did in years past. Or mm-hmm. I'm wrong about that. Correct me if I'm incorrect about that. But I'm mm-hmm. wondering if some of those opportunities have gone away, mm-hmm. if the young people of the junior high years mm-hmm. are doing more things that are not sports related.
Well, we have the same after-school or sports that we've had in the past as well. Currently, we just started cross country and soccer, so those are both going on. Then we transition into basketball, wrestling, track and field, and volleyball in the spring. So, yes, those are all opportunities as well. And through BAM, we do have other athletic opportunities that include things like gymnastics or badminton, archery, rifle club. I'm going to forget at least 10, 15 of them, but there are other opportunities. And that is also on our website as well. You can look at the calendar and see each day what activities are going on and help your child pick which one might be a good fit for them.
And now at the close to the beginning of the school year is a good time to do that so mm-hmm. that they're not missing out and having to start, you know, when their peers are a lot farther along in whatever activity they've chosen.
Exactly. Most of our activities go for about 5-6 weeks so that students can really try a variety of different activities and see if they like them. So they can really go from cross-country to basketball to wrestling to volleyball. They don't have to choose one and that be the only thing that they can do all year long.
Absolutely. And as an actor, I have to ask, what sort of theatrical opportunities are there at Santikahini?
So we do have some after-school activities as well around theater. We have had different clubs in the past that different people have offered in the community. And also, right now, all of our eighth graders have a chance to go to Perseverance, and they're seeing a show on, gosh, I want to say it's either Thursday or Friday. All of our eighth graders are going.
And that's a matinee performance of Peter and the Starcatcher.
Exactly.
And
Thank
I was
you.
There on opening night, and it's a really great show,
mm-hmm.
and the cast are just really having a wonderful time, so I'm
mm-hmm.
sure your eighth graders will enjoy seeing that.
They will.
I can tell you, as a Perseverance actor, I've thoroughly enjoyed performing for high school and junior high school students over the years as well. So I think it's fun for the audience as well as for the folks on stage.
Mm-hmm.
Good.
Exactly.
So Molly Yerkes is the principal at Santikahini Middle School, and tomorrow from 5 to 6 is the fall open house. And you can go to the Santikahini website to learn more about what's going on at the school, and you can mm-hmm. refine your questions. So in that one-hour window tomorrow, if you're a parent or a student, mm-hmm. you'll be able to find out more and get answers to your questions.
Exactly.
Any other information you'd like to impart to our listeners this afternoon, Molly?
No, thank you so much for inviting me.
Well, thank you for being on the air, and I hope you have a great turnout at the open house tomorrow.
Thank you.
This is Bird Note. This cheerful song belongs to the whistling cisticola, a little brown bird from a big family of 50-odd species. There's the simple but cheerful zitting cisticola, familiar to people around the Mediterranean. Africa's singing cisticola is musically more ambitious. Just what the winding cisticola is so urgently winding up isn't entirely clear. And then there are the tinkling, trilling, rattling, whistling, chattering, bubbling, churring, and chirping cisticolas. In Africa, where most of the species are found, they occupy just about any open habitat, from marshlands to agricultural fields. And they look pretty much alike, brown, stumpy-tailed, with beady eyes and stubby bills. But you can tell the males apart by the songs they sing, either in flight or singing from a conspicuous perch. Maybe none is more distinctive than this one, the croaking cisticola. For Bird Note, I'm Mary McCann.
Now is a great time to renew your season tickets for the Juno Symphony. Join conductor Troy Quinn as he and the orchestra explore exciting musical frontiers. Renewals are available now and will hold your seats until September 15th. After that, season tickets are available for everyone. You'll get tickets to our 4 main stage concerts and our symphony showcase. Contact the office at 586-4676 to enjoy live symphonic music at its finest. More information at junosymphony.org.
And it's almost 6 minutes before the hour. I'm Ben Brown. Today's Tuesday, the 30th of August, and you've been listening to a Juno Afternoon. Tomorrow afternoon, Jamie Waste will be hosting, and his guests will include Emma Davis, an artist in residence at the Canvas, and she'll be here to talk about her upcoming First Friday show, which will obviously be this Friday, the 2nd of September. Julie Neihart will be here with details about next week, which is Suicide Prevention Week. And this is going to be kind of exciting. There will be a ride in the earthquake simulator on the air. So fasten your seatbelts, listeners and Jamie, because there's going to be a whole lot of shaking going on. And this Saturday, there's a Whale Watch benefit cruise for the Juno Symphony. And so someone from the Juno Symphony will be here tomorrow to talk about the Whale Watch benefit cruise. So those are guests coming up tomorrow on a Juno Afternoon with Jamie Waste.
Support comes from Northern Audiology and Hearing Services, providing services for identification, evaluation, and rehabilitation for individuals with hearing difficulties. Located in the Jordan Creek Center. Information at 789-6780.
And I, at the beginning of the show, had mentioned some information about classes coming up at the University of Alaska Southeast. I wasn't able to actually speak to a representative from the university, but I am aware that the Outdoor Studies program is offering courses in rock climbing, sea kayaking, backpacking, backcountry navigation and travel. And if you go to the UAS website, you can find that out by looking under the Outdoors Study area of the website, if that's something that interests you. Thanks so much to for listening to a Juno Afternoon, and we'll be back next week.
This is KTOO Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. We also rebroadcast on translators K276AF in the Mendenhall Valley and Auk Bay, K269AO in Lemon and Schweitzer Creeks, K210AM in Gustavus, K220BT in Hoonah, and K210AS in Excursion in